Welcome to Fake Film Fans, episode one, or the pilot, I guess you could say. So maybe episode zero of this new podcast. I'm Walter Singh, and I'm doing this podcast with my co-host, one of my best friends in the world, Catherine Wright. Would you like to say hi for the first episode, Catherine?
Hey, everyone. Hi, listeners. Thanks for having me, Walter.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for being here to this. Also, I've really liked some of the movie blogs you've done before. They're always kind of like cute and simple, but I liked how weekly they were, so I enjoyed reading them.
Yeah, they're not really existing anymore, but I appreciate that. Yeah, this is your party, and I'm just happy to be crashing it.
I thought we could first start off by like talking about just a film we've watched recently and we really liked, and I asked you to bring a film to talk about, and then we'll judge how pretentious it is.
Perfect.
I don't think I've seen the film that you're going to bring, so that's going to be fun for me to judge.
I'm so excited. Yeah, so thanks to you, I have a movie subscription.
Oh yeah, that's true. You stole my movie subscription. I forgot about that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so on Mubi, I saw a double bill, as they sometimes do, for Dogumentaries, which is a dog documentary. And I was like, well, I'm going to watch this because lately I've been around a lot of dogs, which is like a new thing for me. So I kind of have this newfound appreciation for dogs. So I was like, what better way?
Can I ask two questions?
Yeah. Jump in.
One, how do I spell dogumentary? And also, what do you mean by you've been around dogs more than usual? Because I thought you live in the U.S., which is like dog country, right?
This is how you spell dogumentary.
Dogumentary.
Yes. I don't know if Mubi made that up, or if they did, that's genius. But they're probably not the first one.
Do you think there's like a documentary film festival out there annually right now?
There should be. I mean, if there is, and it's not called Dogumentaries. Oh my god. Okay, well, that's a whole different thing. I just googled the word Dogumentary, and Dogumentary TV on YouTube is a channel. So we know it already has been used for something else.
So I'm behind the times.
But basically, yes, it's a good question. Why have I been around more dogs recently? Since you perceive the U.S. as a place full of dogs, probably not a bad assumption. I don't know. I grew up loving cats, and, you know, my best friends here are dog people, but I've never, like, lived with a dog. I mean, in college, it's not like in dorms anyone has a dog, and then I, you know, was living on my own. I didn't have a dog. If anything, I wanted to get a cat. Now, I'm living here in California with my roommates. One of them has a dog. My boyfriend's house, it's not his dog, but his roommates have two dogs. So I'm just around dogs all the time, and I'm like, I guess dogs are cool. Like, I guess I get it.
You guess you get it.
I guess I get it now. Yeah. So I'm like fine. I'm part of the dog appreciation.
Did you like accidentally taste one of your like pet dogs' drool, and you're like, oh, this drool doesn't taste as bad as I thought it did?
Oh my god, you know what literally was one of the things where I was like, oh my god, I'm becoming a dog person, is like this dog. So the one at Christian's house is a really small chihuahua with long hair. Her name is Julie. And she, whenever I pick her up, she just like makes out with my face and like licks like up my nose, like into my mouth. It's like very too much. Normally I would be like, get this dog off of me. And I still don't like it, but I'm like, you're cute. And I love you. And also, I let the dog that lives with me onto my bed the other day, which was a big step for us. So things are changing. Anyways, long story short, I like dogs now. Big deal in my world. That's my current event for the week.
Wow.
So I watched this documentary with my boyfriend who also loves dogs. And it's literally, so it came out in 2018. It takes place in, I think, Chile, in Santiago. And it takes place in a skate park, and it's literally just, like, slice of life, like, dog habits.
Wait, did you say skate park?
Skate park.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so these two dogs live in a skate park. They're, like, homeless, technically, but their home is, like, this public skate park. I think the story is that, like, these filmmakers started off making a documentary about these, like, young teenagers that, like, hang out at the skate park, but then they just ended up filming these dogs all the time. So, yeah, it's a lot of, like, you never see humans, but we hear their dialogue a lot, and it's just, like, watching the dog's behaviors, like, watching park landscapes, like, sometimes really almost grotesque close-ups of, like, dog. Like, I can't even tell what texture of the dog I'm looking at, and there's like a fly on it.
Oh, dog body parts.
Yeah, dog anatomy. So yeah, it's cool. It's very, has like a cozy vibe, just like getting to know their habits, but of course it is also like has some sad moments because they are ultimately homeless dogs. So
it was mostly cute though, right?
I mean, it wasn't, like, what you would expect a movie about dogs where they're, like, trying to make it really cute. Like, I feel like there wasn't a lot of perspective, like, inserted into it. It was really just, like, here's what these dogs do all day at this skate park. Like, literally. So, it was cute because they're dogs and they're just, like, vibing. But, like, I don't think it necessarily, like, was meant to be cute. It was just like, yeah, it's just dogs hanging out. I don't know.
Dogs hanging out. All right. Do you feel like this film kind of shows that skater dogs are a little different from normal dogs? Or is it more just about stray dogs in general?
I think it's more about stray dogs in general. But what was cool is that, like, you do hear dialogue that you assume is from some of the same people over a period of time. But you, again, it's all focused on the dog. So you hear dialogue and you're like, oh, I think this is that same person that was talking before. But you never see any humans. Like, it's totally focused on the dogs. So you get some of the flavor of, like, the social life around them. But it's mostly, like, you see the skate park as, like, they see it. And it's just, like, yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at the documentary on YouTube TV. It's all, no surprise, it's all dog content.
So the film I want to bring in is the Die Nibelungen 2-part movie series by Fritz Lang. I'm not going to be able to pronounce any of the words in this.
Wait, pause. But what if I just put it into Google Translate?
Yeah, go ahead. If you want to give me a German check on how I should be pronouncing this.
Yeah. Let's see. Die Nibelungen.
Die Nibelungen. All right. So all I know, it's German because it's based off an epic poem or something from a while back, I guess. I really don't know anything much historically about this film. But it's a silent film, fantasy film by Fritz Lang, made in 1924. So this was, like, Fritz Lang made some early films before Metropolis, and some of them were, like, really, really hyped, and this was one of them. I think there's a lot to like about the movie, and I had a lot of fun with it. But I will say that my attention span was not, like, always 100% on the film when I was watching it.
All right, so when you say this is a film series, what does that mean? How many films are we talking?
Oh yeah, it's, the film is a two-parter. So the first movie is called Siegfried, and the second film is called Kriemhild's Revenge, and they're both 2 hours and 30 minutes long. So it's 2 hours, so together there are 5 hours of silent black and white medieval
silent.
What? Am I pronouncing silent wrong?
No, I was just saying it for emphasis to myself.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. I mean, there's a bit of fantasy in it, too.
Okay, it looks cool. I finally was able to locate it on Letterboxd, and I'm looking at the sort of banner photo that they have associated with it, and it looks pretty cool, actually.
It is very famous for its, like, early set designs, and it just looks like a really, really good film. I will say, like, the film's a little bit like a pizza. I don't know if this is only a thing about me, but you know how, like, you order one pizza for yourself, and you eat, like, two slices, maybe even, like, one slice, and you're kind of, like, done?
Never happened to me, but go on.
Okay, so I guess this metaphor only works for me then. When I order a pizza, I always order one whole pizza, and I eat one or two slices, and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Every bite starts to taste exactly the same, and I can't eat all eight slices anymore.
Because you're so delicate.
Yes.
Oh, wait, okay, wait. So you can only eat one or two slices, not because you're full, but because it all starts to taste the same. So you're still hungry.
I wouldn't say I would be hungry by then, but, like, if I over-ordered food, like, if I went to, like, McDonald's and ordered, like, six hamburgers, well, it wouldn't be, like, six exact hamburgers, it would be, like, six different things on a menu, I would eat, like, two, be full, but I could eat a third one, right?
Right, yeah.
So, pizzas, I eat two, and I'm full, and I'm like, nah, I don't want to overeat. Because I'm sick of this.
Two pieces of pizza.
Yeah, two pieces. Maybe three if I'm feeling hungry that day. Yeah.
All right.
Why? How many pizzas can you eat? What the fuck is this? Why am I... Wait. I thought three pizzas is a lot. You can eat...
I don't know. Like, four. I feel like four is, like, the average...
Really? Okay, then maybe I'm not even full. Maybe it's just like I'm sick of pizza.
No, I don't know if that's average. It's my average. If I'm eating pizza, I like, and I don't have to share it with anyone, like I just ordered a whole pizza for myself, like I'm gonna definitely eat at least four pieces. Anyways.
Are you talking about like a 4-inch pizza or something?
No! 4-inch pizza.
Are you talking about like a Lunchable?
No.
Like a Lunchable pizza? So I get eating four slices of a Lunchable pizza, but are you like 16 inches pizza, four of them for average?
That's not even that much food. Like, anyways. we'll agree to disagree.
I thought eating four slices was too much. Okay, so now I've learned that, like, it probably is just me getting sick of the taste. But, like, 2 weeks later, I want to do it again. I want to order another big pizza. And, like, even though I remember getting sick of the taste 2 weeks before. And that's why this film's like a pizza for me, basically. It's, like, a super long film. What makes it really fun is not, I mean, of course, there's a lot of things that make the film interesting, but, like, what makes it attractive to me is, like, not that long of a list, but every single time I came back to the film after, like, taking a break or, like, oh, I can't watch this right now, I came back to the film for that short amount of time, I was like, oh, man, I'm enjoying this a lot. The movie's about a guy called... Dang, I'm not going to get these names right, unfortunately, but it's about a guy named Siegfried, and he's like kind of a Marvel hero for a bit, marries the queen, Kriemhild, by like doing some messing around with some political drama in the city where Kriemhild lives in, but then he gets murdered because of the drama he created. Basically, Kriemhild's brother is the king. And the king, yeah, you know what? None of this is going to make sense, but I'm going to try my best. Kriemhild's brother is the king, and he tries to marry someone else, but unfortunately, he's too weak, so he gets Siegfried to fake it, and it becomes an entire mess, and after he marries the woman, he kills Siegfried. Yeah, so that's kind of the first part of the film. The second part two is just... Kriemhild being like, holy fuck, you killed my brother, I'm gonna fucking kill you guys. And that's like a pretty badass part. I know a lot of people like the first movie more because the set designs are a lot cooler. One of the best examples of that is like Siegfried kind of becomes a superhero by defeating a dragon. And the dragon is literally like one of the cutest set plots you could, like props of the olden days you could see. It kind of looks more like a dinosaur, right? It looks like an albino dinosaur.
Oh, it totally looks like a little lizard.
Yeah, like an albino gigantic lizard.
It's also, did you intentionally choose a photo where he's like smiling at me? He looks like he's smiling.
I always think he looks like he's smiling, even when he gets stabbed to death.
He's very cute. Yeah,
he's literally so cute. He reminds me also of a lot of like the little dinosaur toys I would used to buy as a little kid. So I wouldn't even be surprised if this was like a little toy and they just like superimposed it into making it, or zoomed in. That's the word I'm looking for. Zoomed in like super far to like create this. But yeah, it also moves like the old sort of, do you know Rainforest Cafe?
I have never really been to Rainforest Cafe, but I know what you're talking about.
All right. Sounds like you missed out your entire childhood, but that's fine.
I was going to say this reminds me of the dragons from Dragon Tales, if you saw that children's program.
That's true. Dragon Tales' dragons actually move a little more fluid than this dragon did. That's why I brought up Rainforest Cafe, because it has this like mechanical movement.
It's like Well, I've been to a Chuck E. Cheese. I know what an animatronic stuffed animal is.
Doesn't Chuck E. Cheese come out in live costume?
Now I'm getting confused. You might be right, but I feel like a big part of Chuck E. Cheese is the animatronic concerts where they're like doing shit and they're like, dude, I need to Google this. What the hell? Did you go to Chuck E. Cheese?
I did. But I've only seen the animatronic shows in a video game. I've never seen it in real life. I don't think my Chuck E. Cheese had them.
Dude, yeah, okay, just, they would play concerts. I'm copying this image. I mean, it was really creepy. I mean, maybe you've seen it, but...
Did you find it creepy when you were young?
A little bit, because you know it's like, it doesn't look real at all. Like, it's not like you think it, you know what I mean? Like...
Yeah, I kind of remember this now.
And they're moving very robotically.
I kind of feel if they let you touch them... As a kid, it would be less creepy. I don't know.
You weren't really supposed to touch them. They were up on like a stage. Probably they were afraid we would break them or something.
I remember that. I'm starting to remember. Maybe my Chuck E. Cheese did have these kind of animatronics. But nonetheless, I'm going to continue with the Nibelungens.
Okay. Ooh, look at this. This is like a little... Are those mushrooms on cave walls or something? What am I looking at?
They might be mushrooms. This film was so famous for its sets, as I said. And, like, it had, like, this was a cave of a dwarf cave. And they could be mushrooms. It's supposed to be a fantasy-like cave, right? So there's stalagmites and stuff like that. And I just wanted to show... I just wanted to, like, tell you that the sets in this film were very symmetrical, they were very intentional, and that was always incredibly fun. So, then, so they have that, like, rigid form of, like, very set, concrete sets, and then there's, like, these, out-of-the-blue scenes where... there's like a tiny little bit of weird montage-y surrealism where like when Siegfried gets killed, he sort of sends his last message to what's her name? Kriemhild. And that was very fun to like, you know, kind of juxtapose and see at the side by side. I will say though, the first film and the second film, in my opinion, are kind of two different films. Besides the fact that the characters are, there's like some characters that exist in the first film and the second film, the fantasy elements in the first film basically disappear in the second film. And a lot of the characters in the first film are dead by the time the second film starts. I literally feel like both films are very different. The queen is kind of like a dumb blonde in the first film. And then the second film, she becomes like this vengeful tyrant. So, yeah.
The blonde to vengeful tyrant pipeline.
Yes, exactly. Very common trope, honestly.
Yeah.
The other thing I will say, though, is I wouldn't take my word too, like, sincerely, because I could not read any of the font in this fucking film. So
it looks fine.
I could not read it, especially when the names came out.
Well, the names are really hard to read because it's not like we know what the name. It's like they're weird German names. But you can read everything else, right?
Yeah, sort of. Maybe I'm just a bad... Maybe I should go back to school or something.
Jeez. No, it's a cool, like, medieval... I feel like there's... I feel like this kind of font is making a comeback. Yeah, I feel like people would be using this type of font as a tattoo or on a t-shirt.
Yeah, I do recall some tattoos that use this font now that you mention it.
It's like this medieval sort of font, I feel like. Yeah.
So quite honestly, I'm probably using a font as an excuse because, as I mentioned before, my attention wasn't like perfectly on this film when I was watching it. So, but the font did not help. That's all I will say. But by the end... By the end the second film started, honestly, I was pretty, like, into it. Because, as I said, this dumb blonde turns into a vengeful tyrant. And her vengeful tyrant was so good. It's honestly one of my favorite performances I've seen in so long. And I know silent films kind of elevate performances, especially ones that don't have to, like, be too dynamic. But I just really, really enjoyed it. It was, like, super fun, and her, like, I'm mad, and I don't care. Because basically she kills her whole family in order to get revenge.
Spoiler. Just kidding.
fair. There's this one scene where she's just ordering people to shoot flaming arrows at her family, and so... It's one of my favorite scenes because she's just standing there with her face stone cold, upset, and all these people behind her just shooting fire arrows into her fucking family. And it's just like a very good embodiment of what I meant. Then the close-ups in this film on her were also very good. It always showed her face with, like, super blankness, and you could always feel that there was a bit of a sadness, but it was like, I legit don't give a shit. I don't care that I'm sad. I'm just fucking upset that you killed my husband. I'm coming at you guys. And as I mentioned, like, the first film, her husband, Siegfried, he has, like, a Marvel sort of thing. Basically, he has magic, he has, like, one weakness, which is why he was backstabbed and killed. And but he's like super strong, super buff, super charming, everything, powers, blah blah blah. In the second film, all that just disappears, and there's no magic anymore, and it's just her going around and manipulating. So how she tries to manipulate, how she ends up getting revenge is she's married off to the Huns, which the costumes are a little racist. Except I can't even tell if it's like, yellow face or black face, honestly. It's like a mix of weird racism. But she like gets married off to the Huns, and basically she gets the Huns mad enough that they want to kill all her whole family. So yeah. And I love the pictures where she's standing next to her Hun husband, because her Hun husband is just crouched. It's like such a bad, I don't know if it's like good to find this funny, but it is. Like, she's just upright, tall, angry, and her husband is like angry but in the crouch sort of I'm a hunchback type of way.
Yeah, this is your obsession with posture coming in.
It's true. I love posture. So yeah, there's another scene that I really like where she tells one of her generals to go kill her family, and the general really doesn't want to, and he's just pleading with her and telling her, it's your family, it's your family. And she just has this stone cold face. And it's just like very cool. Yeah.
And her hair looks great.
Yeah, this whole time she's wearing Hun costumes. So in her revenge time. So besides that, like, I also thought you might find this interesting because they have this like burning house scene. And so this like in the 1920s, right? And it made me think about like this film must have been really fun to make because there were like a bunch of people running around, running through this burning house, coming back out, pretending they were dying, jumping off ledges. It was like there were like true war scenes. And since this was in the 20s, I thought that was like pretty fun to watch.
Wait, this might be really stupid. Do you think there was actually like fire and people were running through it?
I don't know. I feel like it looked like it. I don't feel like the fire looked fake, but I could also have been completely tricked by Lang's special effects. So,
how could he even do fake fire in the 1920s? I don't understand.
Yeah, I know. Maybe there were like, maybe you could like scratch it with chemicals and then like only film smoke. That could have been a possibility. But honestly, I think it looked like it was burning. So I'm just going to think it was burning. Yeah. Plus, circuses, stage performers, fire eaters always played with fire. So I'm sure they had some idea of how to control fire. But yeah, my real point is exactly the same as your point. It's kind of cool they did it in the 20s.
Wow. I would be scared to be an actor having to run through fire, personally, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, me too. I'd freak out, yeah. Because it looked like when I was watching the film, I thought I was freaking out for them. It also reminded me a little bit of Tarkovsky's Nostalgia.
Dude, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, I knew, like, because you watched it.
I didn't watch... I was thinking of, it's The Sacrifice where they burn a house down.
Oh my god, I'm so stupid. You're right.
Isn't it?
It is. I made a grave mistake. I apologize.
But it's because I that's like my favorite Tarkovsky, actually. So, I remember it. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. But didn't he build a miniature version of a house to set on fire for that?
I actually don't know. So it was a really small house?
I've just seen these photos of him with a really small house replica that he sets on fire, but I don't know, I don't remember if there's scenes inside of the house that they would have had to film with real fire. But I know there's like...
What about when they were standing outside?
Yeah, so yeah, I think it's a little tiny house.
What? Oh my god, I'm actually so... Then my point has been like... completely destroyed. I didn't even realize that.
I know, but that's what I was thinking, where I was like, he didn't even use like, we should have a fact check on this, but I'm pretty sure. So it's crazy that like, if this was really real, like a real freaking house, that he had people running, like, that's insane.
From Wikipedia, Alexander's house specifically built for the production was to be burned for this climatic scene in which Alexander's burns his house and his possessions. The shot was very difficult to achieve, and the first failed attempt was, according to Tarkovsky, the only problem during the shooting. I don't know, it kind of sounds like the house was...
Where's the... Here's the freaking... Here. I think that maybe they did burn the real house, but... Look at this. This is the photo that gave me the fucking... It's him standing with a little house, and in the background is the house that is a normal size. So maybe this was just for tests.
Why are there two houses? Such a weird picture. Alright. I don't know. Anyways. I just imagine, The last scene of The Sacrifice, it literally is one guy standing in front of a gigantic house burning. Like, and you just watch the gigantic house slowly burn down. So if that was all just a small house, do you think it would look like that?
It's all movie magic to me, Walter.
Well, what I wanted to say, if it wasn't a small house, was that that scene is, like, powerful and everyone remembers that scene, but... I like that scene a lot too, because not just because of how somber and like how emotional it is. It's also like, imagine burning a fucking house down while filming a movie. That would have been so like metal and fun. So I just like think back to this film where it looks to me it's not movie magic and they're just burning a fucking house down. And you have this girl who's just ruthless and mad, and you have all these sub actors, probably the wrong word. What's the right word here?
Extras.
All these actors who don't get credits running around. And just, I don't know. If I was one of those actors, I'd probably be laughing my head off. I couldn't imagine like doing that scene seriously. You'd feel like you're like dodging fires, and I don't know, it'd just be kind of fun to do a scene like that. So
no, then the fear is like real. You don't even have to act. They're just like run around in this on fire house and be scared, and it's like, well, yeah, I'm gonna be scared.
I don't know, if I was gonna run in fire, I think I would have fun if I felt like it was safe. Though
this was the 1920s. They were probably, I don't know. I feel like it was not safe at all.
You think they were like forced into this scene? Like they weren't told, and they were like, all right, you guys have to run into fire. And if you don't make it out alive, you're dead. Like Squid Game, right?
I mean, but really, like how, even if it wasn't framed like that, it's like, I mean, you're taking on this risk of running through a fiery house. That's scary. I would not be having fun, but you know what? I wouldn't sign up for the job. So some of these thrill seekers might enjoy it. I don't know. I was just going to ask you about recent movies you've seen, which is like your least favorite thing for me to do.
Oh, well, I've seen Last Night in Soho, so that's a recent movie. I've been watching a lot of recent movies. Go ahead, ask.
Okay, Dune.
Oh, I haven't seen Dune yet. Yeah.
Okay, Spencer. French Dispatch. Did you see any of those?
Oh, I thought Spencer was the name of the person you watched the film with.
No, Spencer, the Case Duo movie about Princess Diana.
Oh, no, I haven't seen it. Are you enjoying? Did you watch them, I mean?
No, I didn't see Spencer, but I saw French Dispatch and Dune. I want to see Last Night in Soho now that you liked it.
Yeah, those films just haven't come out in Hong Kong, I think. Did you think people were saying French Dispatch is like the best Wes Anderson film, right?
That's not in my community.
That reaction.
No, like, I think most people are just like, are okay with it. They're like, yeah, this is a Wes Anderson movie. I thought it was cool, but it's definitely not his best. Now I see one person on Letterboxd I follow that gave it 5 stars and rewatched it, and you haven't seen it, and you hate Wes Anderson, so we're not going to talk about it.
All right, so I think that's about as much time as you have for the first episode.
It flew by.
It did. And honestly, I had a lot of fun. So hopefully next week we can talk about more films and shit on them too. Or praise them. Whatever we have to do.
I look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
I'm Walter and this is Catherine. Thank you for listening to Fake Film Fans. Hope you enjoyed listening, and until next time.